I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And this is your childhood trauma this week. We are talking Buffy Season 1, episodes, is it 13 through 15, Ash?
Yep.
Surprise, Innocence, and Phases. We talk about Buffy each week. We do three episodes at a time. If you like the series, if you have ever liked the series, I encourage you to watch along with us. We have a little bit of fun talking about it. We learn maybe a little bit more each time we watch it. And I think with the if you haven't watched Buffy in a few years, like, it's a different experience as you get more perspective and as you get older to look back, especially if you grew up watching Buffy, which I think a lot of people did. If you, like, go back and watch it as an adult, it's also an interesting thing. Which I guess is probably where we should start with Surprise, which is all about Buffy, sort of becoming an adult, so to speak. Well, what do you think about Surprise, Ash?
I really like this episode. It, you know, the way it progressed, to that final moment, you know, starting off with Buffy, you know, she's about to turn 17, you know, and she wants to...
Finally? Damn.
She, you know, she's a teenage girl who wants to, you know, push our relationship with Angel further, but she's afraid, about it maybe being, you know, the wrong decision. But she really, it's something that she wants, but she's afraid, like, just because you want something doesn't mean you should actually do it. So, and then you got the Oz and Willow progression, you know. I love Oz. Oz is, I guess you can see, kind of an underrated character, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think, so, you know, people who have not watched Buffy, by and large, don't like Seth Green. I've always sort of liked him because of Oz, you know. But Oz is, you know, and we'll talk more about his werewolf status later. But I mean, Oz as a human is a very likable, relatable character in a world where, you know, Xander is supposed to be like the normal one, but he's sort of not always likable to me. But Oz is just so laid back and cool and accepting of everything that, you know, it's really hard not to, even if he's just sort of around, it's hard not to like the
guy. Yeah. Yeah, he is, you know, pretty much sort of just around. But, yeah, the way he just so nonchalant
about it. I mean, he's just so accepting of it. He's like, oh, they're vampires? I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
That
explains a lot. I believe what he said.
It's like, okay, but and it shows how he's very so different from all the other characters, you know, in the series. You know, a lot of the characters on the show are very, I guess, emotional.
Yeah,
could be like quite emotional. He's a very stoic character. I guess we'll talk more about him in
Phases. The only other character, though, who is as accepting of everything as Oz is Cordy. Like, when Cordy first found out about stuff, she just takes it in stride the way Oz does.
I'm kind of hoping you're in a gang.
So, I guess one of the big reveals, the earlier reveal, is that Jenny Calendar is not named Jenny Calendar. She has some other name, and she is a lying, duplicitous bitch.
Oh, really?
Really.
I can't be mad at Jenny Calendar.
I mean, it's not entirely her fault because she's following orders, but the orders she's following are pretty shitty orders.
That's not her fault, though.
And like, after having like met Buffy. To, like, wish an Angel, who is now, you know, helping save the world, to, like, wish bad things upon them seems kind of shitty.
Well, that's not her, though. Like, she's cut, you know, actually meeting Angel, and, you know, she understood, like, you know, he saved my life. He's done good, you know?
Yeah, so let me make sure I ship him halfway across the world where he can't be with the girl he likes.
Well, you know, she's following orders, you know. She got to do what she got to do.
So, okay, so were, like, guards at Auschwitz. They were following orders. That's, like, not a good, that's not a good excuse to do a shitty thing. Obviously, it's not the same. I'm just saying, I was following orders is not a good excuse to do a shitty thing. I never liked Jenny Callender that much to begin with, to be honest. So, like, when this happens, I'm just like, yeah, I hope Buffy kills that bitch.
I actually like Jenny. I feel bad for her, you know, anything, because, you know, she was put in a fucking...
Bad for Giles.
Well, him too. But, you know,
he finally has a relationship with a woman, and now she's been lying to him the whole time about who she really is. So.
Yeah, well, she kind of had to.
Or she could have just chosen to be a normal person and not some weird gypsy spy.
It was part of her tribe. She didn't want to break away from her tribe. It's not like, you know, Angel was this innocent person, you know? He kind of had it coming.
Okay.
So,
but again, this episode sort of underscores this concept of vengeance and how irrational it is. Justice is not what we are after. Vengeance is. So what we are after is not, you know, punishing him for what he did, which would have been killing him, right? Like, he killed someone we love, so he dies. That would have been a just punishment, at least in my opinion and in some opinion. Like, torturing him for 200 years is not, that's not just punishment, that's just, like, being sadistic.
Well, they're making him suffer because they're, trying to suffer.
Yeah, but they're not still suffering. Like, if somebody in my family died 200 years ago, I'm not suffering. I'm over it. I never knew them. Are you still, I mean... Is there anybody 200 years ago in your family that causes you a lot of, like, emotional anguish? I mean...
No, who's in my family 200 years ago? I don't look that far back.
I mean...
But clearly, she was someone very important, very special to the clan.
Yeah, and that also made me wonder, like, what about all the other people? Like, she was the most loved daughter of her clan. Like, what about all the other daughters? Were they not pissed off about it?
Well, she was clearly important. Someone important.
She was probably Cordelia in another life, basically.
Cordelia. That would have made the Angel series very interesting. Holy shit. That would have been an awesome plot twist.
So Angel, what we do learn though is he cannot experience a moment of true happiness. And apparently for Angel, true happiness means having sex with Buffy, because that is the only happiness he can know, is like being inside the Slayer.
That game was good, man. You know, Slayer muscles.
Apparently. You have thoughts on this? Because we do learn later that Angel can have sex, and Angel can have relationships. He can be in love with Buffy. He can hold her and hug her and kiss her and all that. But that doesn't make him truly happy. The only true happiness he knows is fucking Buffy.
Well, it's with the love. You know, it's a lot of things in play, you know, to bring upon the happiness. It's not just the sex.
Oh, it's not just the sex, but it's also not just the love. It has to be the loving sex. And like, by the way, Joyce, absentee mother, like, your daughter's staying out all night, like, you're not even, like, calling to try to find out where she is. I'm telling you, Joyce is just the worst mother.
Well, no, you found in the next episode, she thought she was with Willow. She was supposed to stay the night at Willow's house, so...
when they do the round robin thing, I'm just like, that never would have worked at my house, ever. Like, my mom would have called one of my friends' houses, like, the second time I did that, and that would have been it. Game over. I don't think it was meant to, but it underscores the fact that all of the Scoobies, including Buffy, who's not really a Scooby, have absentee parents. Like, none of their parents pay attention to what they do.
Well, Absentee parents wise, I think Willow probably takes the cake when it comes to absentee
Well,
parents.
yeah, but Xander's pretty. I mean, Xander's right there too. I don't think that. Remember in season one, Xander went over at like went over on a school night to work on a science project at his substitute teacher's house, and his parents never said a word. So.
Well, they're not really that absent. They're there.
They just don't give a
terrible.
Shit.
They're just terrible. Willow's parents just aren't there. They're like rarely home. People just come all of their house.
So I guess the other big thing before, besides Angel losing his soul, which is really more of a discussion for the next episode, is that Spike is rolling around on a wheelchair these days.
Rolling.
Yes, yeah, Spike is riding dirty. And
oh my god.
Yeah, that would have been a great theme song if it had existed back in the day. But I'm not. He also has this weird scar on his face now. Like, yeah. None of this makes sense to me in vampire mythology, but okay, I'm just not gonna question it. Just let it go.
Well, yeah, he just hasn't completely healed yet. I mean, his face does eventually heal. But...
the hell is taking so long, though?
Maybe they just heal slower. I mean, it was a pretty big, collapse.
Drusilla was in it too, and she's up and about.
Because she just got that full power strength that she just got from her sire.
Just quit it.
She just got all that good energy. She's healing fast. You know, she's still on the good drugs.
I did love the scene where Drusilla starts freaking out about the flowers.
Oh,
and Spike's just like real calm. Like, let's try something else with the flowers, huh?
I love Drusilla. Like, first of all, she's just terrifying me. Like, if I was there and Drusilla had this massive meltdown about some roses, I'd have been scared of shit. Because to me, Drusilla is so fucking unpredictable.
That scene to me, it underlines to you what you love about Drusilla. It underlines to me what I love about Spike. He's just so, like, used to her shit and, like,
yeah.
knows how to deal. He's just like, let's just change the flowers. Let's move on. No big deal. Just keep going. and they are assembling flowers and things because the judge is coming, which I guess we can lead into.
Have a party.
We can lead into part two of the episodes, which was titled Innocence. The judge is. I'm not really. Is he a demon? Is that an accurate description?
He is a
being that senses evil and destroys everything that is not pure evil. Okay.
If it has any like speck of humanity in it, he can destroy it.
And interestingly enough, he does say that Spike and Drusilla have a little humanity.
They reek of jealousy. He's like, yeah. So what? Spike.
I guess before we talk about the judge storyline or anything, though, I guess the important part of this is in the process of watching Buffy grow up. Like, obviously, it's every person, especially, I think, girls' nightmare that, like, the person they have sex with for the first time or anybody they, like, give themselves to and so fully the way Buffy gives herself to Angel just, like, rejects them and it acts... And Angel just obviously like takes that to, or Angelus takes that to an extreme. And, you know, it's one of the things fantasy does is it literalizes ideas. And, like, so, like, the literal worst case scenario here of, like, what happens after you sleep with somebody is they leave you at their place, they start killing your friends. they talk
that
shit about you until you weren't very good.
And then called you a pro.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a little mixed messages, okay? And then in the next episode, he has, or maybe it was that, he said, was it good for you too? You just said it wasn't very good, bro. Make up your mind. If you're gonna taunt her, at least be consistent.
That's what girl pain is. The mixed messages.
Yeah, but I just felt so sorry for Buffy in this because not only Does she have to deal with the fact of the person that she tried to trust being obviously the last person she ever should? She also has to deal with, like, okay, I have to take that in stride and, like an adult, even though I'm still not an adult, as part of becoming an adult, oh, I still have a job to go to, a very, very, very important job that I have to go save the world again, like in the middle of all this. Which apparently, I have a big question to ask you. Apparently, rocket launchers, big deal. Why does the rocket launcher never get used again? If it can kill the judge, why did they not? Why don't they try to use it on Glory or Adam or anything? Like, why not just try a rocket launcher out on Glory one day and see what happens? And
I have.
why don't any of the demons or anything ever try to use a rocket launcher on Buffy?
You would think. A lot of these demons and vampires, they're not that modern in thinking, you know. They're not Mr. Trick, you know, in season three and stuff like that. But I think the rocket launcher does get referenced. Oh no, Buffy did try to use it in season seven, but it was on an innocent person.
Yeah, I remember that, like, Xander forgot how to use it at some point.
Yeah, it does get referenced a bit. But yeah, she does try to use it again in season seven.
Yeah,
You know, like,
but I mean, if I figured out, like, oh shit, this just in one shot, I just took out, like, the most dangerous thing I've come across, like, I'm gonna keep it in my arsenal. I'm gonna keep using it. Like, next time I have a big bad to deal with, I'm pulling out the rocket launcher. Fuck this little thing that shoots arrows. I have a rocket launcher now.
Yeah, but you know, you just you know, it could be overkill for some things. But
Well, I mean,
like
the real reason is it would be too simplistic of a story.
yeah,
Like, bad guy comes to town, Buffy shoots him with a rocket. The
I don't think think about the big especially the big bads of the next few seasons. You got the mayor, who was invincible.
Okay,
You
yeah,
had.
no weapon forged could hurt him, but he had never been blown into tiny bits.
He literally got sliced in the head, like down the middle, and then formed back
Yeah,
up. But
but the judge was cut into tiny pieces and he come back together. Like, if you blew the mayor into little bits and then put his parts in different boxes, problem solved.
he'll come back together like Terminator 2, the liquid. He'll just come back together.
And then Adam, I strongly believe a good rocket launcher would have taken Adam out.
I think he could've. They could've gotten Adam with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you gotta get the rocket.
And by the way, spoiler alert, not like we care about spoilers, but they did kill the mayor after his transformation with, like, a big bomb. So, I mean,
Yeah.
yeah.
There you
Anyway, though, so what did you think of this as a two-part episode? Comparing it, let's say comparing it to the What's My Line two-parter. How does this come? You like it more or less?
I definitely like it more because it gives, you know, actually what makes this two-parter so great is they literally like aired, I think, Innocence like the day after Surprise.
Really?
So you didn't, yeah, you didn't, I don't think you had to wait like a whole week to watch Innocence. So that right there is great itself. But yeah, it gives a lot more depth, you know, and everything with because the emotion of these characters of something. It was a great cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Great cliffhanger. Like you realize what the fuck. Like first you're like, what the fuck is happening? And then it like sinks in when
Yeah.
you watch it first. I'm like, oh my gosh!
Yeah, I
Like
mean, it really
he just
took.
got.
I was saying, it really took Buffy almost back to a season one place of. I just felt bad for her, like, and you just feel like how much is on this girl's shoulders, which we haven't got as much a sense of in season two after she, I don't know, got over her Trump post-traumatic stress, and she's just
Yeah.
been like back kicking people's asses lately. But like, there's, you know. I think these three episodes are the start, or like maybe like a turning point. I don't think any of these three episodes are as good as the season one finale, but but I think these three episodes are a turning point for the series in that now every episode is like furthering not only some plot or dealing with some battle, they are advancing like the emotional relationships of each character in each episode, and we're really getting somewhere with this. And
Yeah,
yeah.
like the big bad, you know, is such an emotional connection with both of these characters, you know, and being put in that place where, you know, season one she had to go against the master, who she never met, but she
Right.
was afraid of. But there wasn't that connection necessarily. So in this one, it's just like.
Angelus, by the way, is the shittiest big bad. I mean, he's a good big bad because, like you said, it's just hard for Buffy to kill him. But in terms of like his actual power level, he's a really shitty
Well,
big
but like his gift is like it's one of those things that makes him very different from Spike. What makes him so dangerous is the fact that he takes his time, even though you know he doesn't rush anything, which is something that Spike does. That's why he always, you know, fails. But
Well,
he,
Angelus fails too, to be clear.
yeah, you know, technically, yeah, technically. I mean, he almost won. Like literally, he was like right there.
Okay, but Spike almost won too before Joyce hit him in the back of the
Yeah, that's true.
head.
That's true. But you know, the thing about
Go ahead, sorry.
the thing about Jealous, what I was saying that he, like, his big thing is like he likes messing with people's heads.
Yeah.
He stalks people. He does like that's how he got Drusilla, you know, the stalking, and then, you know, he wears you down so much, and then he goes in for the kill.
Yeah. I'd say the biggest difference in Angelus and Spike is made much more explicit at the end of season two, as in like Spike just wants to have a little chaos and have a little fun, and like Angelus actually wants to end the world. So like Spike's not all about ending the world. He's got a good he likes his setup. He's doing all right. He doesn't want to end everything. He might want to kill a Slayer or two every now and then, but he doesn't want to end all of existence. Yeah, I don't know. It was a really good episode. It was a really good pair of episodes, and I do think both with what's going to be happening with Jenny and Giles. And of course, the progression of Cordy and Xander, which we get more to in phases, and Oz and Willow, and you know, it's everything that happens is building towards larger purposes. Whereas in season one and early season two, a lot of the events that occur happen in isolation. Like, okay, it's great that the reptile lady tried to kill Xander, but it really has no effect on anything other than being like a running joke that Xander attracts insect people.
Exact demons. Oh gosh.
So I guess it leads us. By the way, I guess we should note Joss Whedon wrote and directed Innocence, and I believe he. At least I don't think he did Surprise, but I know he did Innocence. Which the more see a lot of the more significant episodes in years to come of Angel and Buffy are Whedon written and directed. All right, I guess we should get to phases. We already talked about Oz as a character. Was it a mistake to introduce werewolves to the city? Like, do we need werewolves?
We've got everything else.
But what? But that's not a reason. Why do we need werewolves?
I mean,
What?
I like the idea of, you know, werewolves, especially in this world where you have vampires and demons and all these monsters, and then you have, you know, here's this monster who is only technically, you know, like a monster only a couple, you know, 3 days out of the month. Every other time, you know, he's just a human being, you know, just a normal person. So, you know, it puts you in that you know, it puts Buffy and the other characters in that position of like, so, you know, this
I feel like we're gonna have a
where.
debate again about whether people should die. I'm gonna say if you're a monster 3 days out of the month, and otherwise you're an ordinary person, but 3 days out of the month you're going around attacking and killing people, then you're John Wayne Gacy. Like, I mean, you're really describing like a lot of sociopathic serial killers. Most of the time, they are ordinary people, maybe even good citizens in their community, but every now and then, they just maim and kill somebody. So, what's so special? I mean, And really, the only argument about the werewolf is that, oh, he doesn't have control of it. But you could also argue, like, sociopaths and pedophiles, like, they have some compulsion. They obviously can't control themselves.
But they make conscious decisions to do this, do what they do.
Well,
Werewolves, that they don't.
so, I mean, best case scenario, Oz should be locked in some sort of special prison for the rest of his natural days.
Well, yeah, on like 3 days out of the month.
Okay, but what you do and when you are in this state where you cannot control yourself, in the rest of the world, literalizing this, people are held responsible for that. If you go into a blackout rage and you are not thinking anymore and you attack some people, you still face legal charges, right?
Yeah, but our world and their world are two different worlds.
I understand that, but trying to apply the logic of our world onto their world, Cain is right. And the guy, the hunter Cain, like, Cain has the right idea. You should kill werewolves. In fact, I remember Angel killing a werewolf in the show Angel.
You shouldn't.
But he did, and he was a good guy. So,
Constantly making this decision to do what they do, I don't think they should kill werewolves.
I feel like if you are a threat to other people, then something should be done about you. And since it is
And you
not
lock them
pract
up.
okay, but it is not practical to build a giant facility to imprison. You know how much money it would cost to maintain a
Could have
werewolf prison?
I'm pretty sure the initiative could have done it. They literally had a prison where they kept things and stuff.
I mean, basically what I'm getting to is if we're going to treat this like real life, we're going to say, okay, this is a fantasy show, but the same morals and ethics that apply to the real world apply to this show, and that's why we can relate to the characters, then Oz, even though it is outside of his control, is a monster. He is every bit as much of a monster as, as someone who every once and again snaps and beats the shit out of their wife or kills somebody.
Yeah, and they go get locked up for it.
Yeah, and Oz should be locked up.
Not at all times, though. I don't know.
Okay, when a drunk is a drunk and they only do bad things when they are under the influence of alcohol, should they only be locked up after they drink, or should they be locked up all the time?
Yes, I hate when you try to pull this shit on me. Whatever. All I'm saying is,
I
I'm
knew
still
you were
sticking
gonna
by my
come to the
statement.
fence of werewolves. You're such a softy. You're such a softy.
Thank you. Fuck, I'm still saying save the werewolves. I'm gonna have
And
a case of
by
save
the
the
way, Larry should probably be locked up too, but he apparently was just had some homophobia he was working through. That, by the way, that's one of my favorite like reveals of anything that happens early in Buffy is like that the big like bully jock is actually just like a self-hating gay
sexually
guy.
harass, yeah. He sexually harasses women and shit like that. It's like, ew. And then he turns out, it's like, no, he's just a self-hating gay guy.
Yeah. I did not like how Cordelia and Willow seemed to be, I don't know, it seemed like they were just trying to figure out how to, I don't know, they were putting up with too much shit, basically, especially Cordelia. Like, Xander is treating Cordelia like shit. And not that they had a good relationship to begin with, but the fact that he is clearly, like, obsessed with these other girls and he's just all in Cordy's face about it. Like, there's no way I'm good with Cordy putting up with that. Like, she
She
should.
treats them like shit too.
Okay, but she doesn't go, oh my god, let's see that cute guy over there. Or, you know what
But
about this
she
guy?
literally said, she correctly tells him, like, you're something that I'm ashamed of.
Okay, but
That is shitty.
it is.
It
Okay, it
like,
is. But at the same time, she takes him to Lover's Lane in her daddy's car. Like she clearly doesn't. She clearly does like him, and people do know about them. What?
well, yeah, now. After
Yeah.
they got caught.
But
Panda was okay with wanting to be, you know, hey, can we actually be a thing? And like, she's like, no. You know,
okay, but you don't have a girlfriend, especially, like, a girlfriend who was out of your league in the first place. But even if she was not, even if she is below your league, you don't have a girlfriend and constantly talk to that girl about other girls. Like, that is just one of the, like, shittiest things you can do.
Those are his friends.
Yeah, but it's his friends who he's both of which he's a little bit in love with.
They're still his friends. If they were his guy friends, you know, and
then
know,
he wouldn't talk about them like that. He wouldn't be obsessed about who they're dating.
That's true, but I'm not gonna put this all on Xander though, because Cordelia is a bitch in this relationship too.
They're
both doing terrible things though.
I just feel like there's a problem. Like, this is primarily a show with a strong feminist message, and like, I mean, I just don't understand how we get from that to the idea that. It's just normal for boys to do this. Like, this is this is the show's attitude in this episode. Is it normal boy behavior is avoiding girls and not knowing what they want, and like, it's okay because they're guys and that's just what guys do. And that's not true. Like, when Cordy is awful to Xander, like, it's made clear to the audience that Cordy is awful to Xander because Cordy is awful, not because this is what girls do. When Xander is awful to Cordy, it's almost saying, like, oh, this is just a guy thing. Guys never know what they want, and they always, like, think about who they don't have, which is not true and shitty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, the show, like, you know, people call this a feminist show. I do think, it's a great feminist show, but, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, that does happen in the series that, you know, it's like how some people felt that, you know, with Buffy sleeping with Angel and him turning evil, it kind of portrayed that it was, you know, Buffy's fault, like it's the girl's fault of why this guy acted the way he did.
Well, apparently she does have the magic vagina.
Magic vagina. The Slayer vagina is magic. but yeah, I understand what you're saying, you know, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I guess, you know, these two characters, you know, trying to find an excuse, you know, these two girls trying to find an excuse or reason why, you know, these guys act, you know, the way that they do or whatever like that. But, you know... Yeah, I think the way it came off to kind of, be a little... Yeah.
So I'll go back. I'll transition from that, something I didn't like, to one of my favorite scenes, which was Oz calling up his aunt and just being like, "Hey, you know your son? Is he a werewolf? Oh, really? How long's that been?"
This is why I love Oz. It's like, why is that not freaking you? Average person will probably freak out over something like that.
You think? If you started waking up in the middle... Well, first of all, if I started waking up, like, naked in the middle of the woods, I'd be like, I'm the Hulk. I knew it. I knew I was destined for greatness. I am the Hulk.
I'll probably just be like, oh my gosh, how much did I drink last night?
Well, like the first time, yeah, but when it happens, like, two or three nights in a row, like...
Either
that or you're going to AA meetings. Like, I have a real problem. I don't even remember when I started drinking. Like, I was sober the last thing I remember.
Next thing you know, woke up naked in the woods.
Basically, at that point, you're just Kevin Garvey from The Leftovers.
Pretty much.
maybe that's Kevin's problem. He's a werewolf. I think it is interesting, though, because there are different portrayals of werewolves in the series as it goes. First of all, they physically look different later on. Like, the werewolves now sort of look like people in a mascot uniform.
Yeah.
They actually look more like wolves later in Buffyverse. And it is explored on Angel that there are some werewolves that are more violent than other. There are different breeds of werewolves. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's... In you know, this is not only a silly looking werewolf, it's a very, as far as Buffyverse goes, this is the most simplistic interpretation of werewolves we get.
Yeah.
I did complain of a couple things about this episode. Overall, I liked it, though, because it was advancing storylines and advancing, more importantly, relationships. Angelus still had a little message for Buffy. Courtesy of the dead girl. Larry is gay. So that's the thing. Xander is really weird about Larry being gay. He was...
Yeah, he's like, okay. It definitely caught him off guard. Because, he's thinking he got the answer. You know, like, this guy's a werewolf. And
I knew it was coming, so I was, paying attention to what he said to him. And, I know what you do at night. You can't hide it from me. And then this one was like, I've been where you are before, man. I know.
So Larry's looking at gay porn or going to gay clubs in the middle of the night or something.
Yeah, apparently wanting to go with Xander now. It's gonna put. I don't honestly don't remember. I know there's more scenes between Larry and Xander. I kind of forgot how it plays out, so I'm looking forward to rewatching them. Anything else about phases that we did not get to?
I like the way, you know, the Oz and Willow progression is, because I liked their scene in Innocence when they're stealing the rocket launcher, and you know, he pretty much, you know, it shows that Oz is very observant.
Right.
He's a very observant guy, and he called right away that Willow was into Xander.
Yeah.
And you know, most people probably I'm just gonna back off that, you know, or whatever, you know, she's totally into somebody else, so I'm not gonna, you know, pursue this further. But he's still into it. He's willing to wait, you know, until the right, you know, and hoping that, you know, she'll, you know, fall for him back the way he's falling for her.
Right.
And I really like the way, you know, he's like, when she's like, you want to make out now? You know, normal people are like, yeah, yeah. You know, he's like, no, just, you know, I'm waiting for that moment. And I like the way it progressed and, you know, Willow taking the initiative, you know. That was her, you know, letting him know, her letting him know that, you know, I do like you. I'm ready to move forward, you know. I'm over to Xander. I'm not worried about Xander. This is about us.
Yeah, I like their relationship as well. I guess we can talk in the future about their relationship in the context of what Willow later learns about herself, which... I mean, makes a lot of this hard to understand or explain for me, and it's a really complicated issue, but we will save that for another episode. I think where we're going right now in season two is a good place. I mean, obviously we know it is. I mean, this is not like when we talk about topical TV, like we know where everything's going now, but I really feel the building of steam in these episodes to where, you know, some parts of early season two just feel like we're sort of just running in place. Now we're actually heading somewhere. We did not talk about it, but I'm guessing you have trivia for us?
Yes. Okay. First, with surprises. Several important plot lines begin in this episode. Oz and Willow have their first date, commencing one of the longest relationships on the show. Angel is transforming to Angelus, becoming the big bad of season two. Spike and Drusilla are established as worthy adversaries, allowing for Spike's eventual return appearances in season three and four, and for his permanent membership as a regular cast for seasons five, six, and seven. In the first dream, Willow says, I don't speak, what is this, French? Yeah, the hippo and piquetun patalon. I don't speak
something
French.
About pants. I remember.
Yeah. Is, which means the hippo store your pants in French while speaking to the monkey. This refers back to her conversation with Oz near the end of What's My Line Part 2, in which, intentionally absurd, he wonders if the hippo animal cracker is jealous of the fact that the monkey is the only animal cracker with pants. Well, sir, all monkeys are French.
Apparently. Which is weird that was in Buffy's dreams, that she wasn't there for that conversation, but all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it says Buffy is not shown to have witnessed this conversation, which leads to credence to her fear that this dream is prophetic, yielding real information about things outside her direct experience to date. Buffy's birthday gift from Angel, her Kladoff ring, not only comes to signify her lost love for the rest of season two, but also plays an important part in the beginning of season three. First, as a resonance attested to Scott Holt's impromptu gift, and then as a mystical focus on Angel's return from the Kafla Hell Dimension. This episode begins a tradition of Buffy birthdays going awry.
Yeah, poor Buffy always has shitty birthdays. My favorite one, I think, was maybe season six, where like they were all trapped in the house together.
Yeah, that's season six. Is it season six?
Five or six. Okay, it was definitely not four. It was either five or six. Because Spike was there, and he was sort of on good terms with them, but not really.
Yeah, it was definitely season six, because I remember, although Buffy does not celebrate her birthday on screen in the final season, the 12th or 13th episode of each season is traditionally when Buffy celebrates her birthday. Her birthday takes place in episode 12 in season 3, Helpless, episode 12, season 4, New Man, episode 13, season 5, Blood Ties, and episode 14 of season 6, Older and Far Away.
Yeah, that's it.
When Spike suggests Buffy not to celebrate her birthday anymore.
It's a good idea, really.
Angel giving Buffy a Kladov ring is the first hint that he is of Irish origin, which would be confirmed in becoming part one.
Even though he has no semblance in any way of an Irish accent.
Yeah, well, he's been in America for like 100 years, but we do get that Irish accent in the flat.
Let's just be glad that's all we get, because if he was speaking like that the entire series, it would be hard to take him seriously. He would basically be Kenya. Not Kenya, Kendra.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I miss you, Kendra. the hole leading to the sewers created in the factory does not appear in the following episodes, nor any episode. No episode feature Wiz apparently appears to have been fixed. Willow mentions that Buffy had once told her to seize the day. She's referring to Welcome to the Hellmouth, where Buffy told her that, and did she did, leading to her getting kidnapped by a vampire named Thomas.
Who was also... No, that wasn't him. Never mind. I was going to say he was also the judge, but that was a different... That was a different vampire.
Yeah. Spike is shown to be severely injured from his ordeal in the church, while Drusilla is uninjured and cured. It is shown that Spike's injuries from the organ falling on him and the fire are such that even weeks later, he still has burns on his face and is confined to a wheelchair, as well as being notably weak. It takes until I Only Have Eyes For You for him to be able to secretly leave the wheelchair, and until becoming part two for him to be shown to be fully recovered. It is a long time.
Yeah.
The organ parts are heavy, though, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Like, broken legs, man.
Like, we want to be real about it. They needed Spike to be weaker, because if they want to keep him around, they didn't want to kill him. They needed him to be weaker because... There's no way that the Spike character could deal with Angelus' shit without them coming to blows and everything, like, way before the season 2 finale. Like, the only reason that they haven't, like, had a fight to the death is because Spike is stuck in his little wheelchair.
This episode marks the first time that Angel loses his soul. It will be restored in becoming part 2 by Willow as her first spell, but he will purposely lose it again in the Angel episode, Awakenings. Willow will restore it once again in Orpheus. Together with Innocence, the show transitioned from Mondays to Tuesdays. This was the last episode we played on a Monday. All subsequent episodes aired on Tuesday.
Yeah, there is a great line in season 6 of... what was it? Once More With Feeling. Dawn's in Trouble. Must be Tuesday.
Yeah. Xander claims that Buffy currently works as a waitress at Denny's by day, a real-world restaurant chain, reference to Denny's. So reference to Snakes in a Can.
Yeah.
And when Buffy went to Angel, I think this is a blooper maybe. When Buffy went to Angel to make sure he was still alive after her dream, she said they never found Drusilla's body. As a vampire, Drusilla's body would turn to dust upon her death anyways.
I didn't catch that. Good point.
When Angel first awakens in pain, he's only clad in underwear, but when he bursts outside, he's fully dressed. Like, he had time to put on pants, a shirt, some socks, and shoes.
I mean, vampires can move pretty quick, alright?
Yeah, but if you're in pain, the last thing I'm worried about is my pants.
It's true.
Spike aids in Drusilla's plan to end the world with the judge, despite his later revelation that he actually doesn't want to end the world, want the world to end, to the point where he aids Buffy against Angelus and the cops.
He doesn't seem particularly happy about the judge plan either, for the record. He's just sort of rolling along. He's not, this isn't his plan. He's just, like, there for it.
Yeah. Like, it is a girl's idea. Like, whatever. Give her what she wants.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, he just wants to be with. He wants Drew to be happy. So, if it makes her happy to kill everybody, okay.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Go along with it.
And I will say, I don't think it would have ended the world. It just would have killed all the people in the world. The vampires would have still been around. So.
But nothing to eat.
True. Maybe there were some evil people left to eat. I don't
know. Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened to American Horror Story Hotel. Like, the judge has come, and then all we're left with are these evil, shitty people.
And Surprise had an audience of 4.4 million households.
That is bigger than we have been hearing.
Yeah. Innocence. The Big Bath in Season 2 has appeared, and Buffy, of all people, helped make it happen. This is the first instance where Xander reveals that he has retained his military knowledge after the events of the Halloween episode. It's the episode where Willow learns of Xander and Cordelia's relationship. The rocket launcher will be used again in Buffy's luckily unsuccessful attempts to kill Principal Wood in Season 7, Episode Him. The explosion of the rocket launcher actually begins slightly before impacting the judge. Josh's commentary explains it as necessary because we had to match the rocket bouncing off of the statue. Although Buffy, I love that scene, by the way, where Angelus and Drusilla see the rocket launcher, they're like, oh shit, and that shot of him, the judge blowing up and then flipping over the...
What killed me was they both got out of the way, but the judge was just like, what is it?
what's that? I love that moment. Although Buffy gets the drop on Angel when she first learns that he's a vampire, and tries to goad him into fighting her when she comes back from visiting her father in L.A., it's not until he reversed Angelus in this episode where they actually engaged in their first actual battle with one another.
I mean, let me say one thing more about the rocket launcher scene. The people in the mall were way too fucking calm. Like, there was a little running around, but, like, somebody tries to suck my soul and then somebody gets shot with a rocket launcher, like, I'm just losing my fucking mind.
I would have been out. One thing, I laughed when the judge, like, killed the first guy, and, like, everybody's just still going about their day in the mall. Like, did no one see that shit? Like,
apparently not.
It's like, why are you people not paying attention?
It's amazing in Sunnydale how much shit happens that nobody seems to notice.
Yeah, it's like, it's another day in Sunnydale. Jenny's past and our third motto is for being in Sunnydale, I've revealed. Drusilla refers to Angel as Angel rather than Angelus. In Angel episodes, Drusilla always refers to him as Angelus, even going so far to call him that Angel Beast when he has a soul. Being he her torturer and sire and slayer of her family, is not surprised she deeply hates him, though being companions for decades. This episode is the only episode of the series to focus on the big bad of the particular season. It is established that Sunnydale has his own army base.
Of course it is.
Like, what the fuck? Which will occur in later stories. Oh my gosh, I swear this place gets bigger and bigger. We learn that there are various degrees of evil in vampires, and Delos does not have enough humanity for the judge to burn him in this episode, but Dalton had enough in the previous episode. When Angelus affirmed to Spike that to kill the girl, you have to love her, it's also going to be foreshadowing to the future and destructive passion between the blonde vampire Spike and the Slayer into season 6. Oz joins the Scooby Gang in this episode, aiding them in stealing the rocket launcher and joining them in going to the factory in the mall. He had learned the truth about the vampires about going vampires in the previous episode. Mm-hmm. Asked about his decision to turn Angel evil, Joss Whedon said that he feels it was necessary to keep the story fresh. Although the fan base wanted Buffy and Angel to be together romantically, Whedon said, "What people want is not what they need."
Well, which is exactly right. If you give people what they want all the time, there's no, like, there has to be conflict and there has to be strife to be drama. Like, for a drama to occur, people can't be happy all the time. It's the way it works.
Or at some point at all. For like just a moment of true happiness. That's all you get on this when it comes to Joss Whedon.
Hey, Joss Whedon, I guess we can talk about it more some other time, but interestingly, he never seemed to understand why the fans sort of rebelled against Riley, which I always thought was obvious, but I've seen interviews with him where he was just like, I don't know, I just don't think people wanted to see Buffy in a relationship, which is obviously not true, because there are so many people that like ship Buffy and Angel and Buffy and Spike. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
I think it's just him.
Yeah, nobody liked that dude. Maybe.
He just didn't.
There's a reason he's not acting anywhere now, okay?
Aw. I don't think he was a bad actor. He did some stuff.
He was kind of a bad actor. We'll talk about him when he comes up.
I don't think the actor was bad. I think he could have been better with a different actor, but I don't think the way he portrayed Riley.
Anytime you say something would be better with a different actor, it's a good indication that actor is not very good.
I don't think the actor was bad. I just think it could have used a different actor. Anyways, the rocket launcher was originally going to be a tank, but that turned out to be too expensive. How the fuck are you going to get that in the mall?
I guess they would have had to film it outside. Maybe at the local park or football or local professional football team or whatever they have in Sunnydale.
Local professional football team. Oh my gosh. And a flashback scene of Buffy and Angel consummating their relationship. It's not actually David and Sarah's breathing we can hear, but rather Joss Whedon. Rising sound editor Cindy Revedu. Apparently Joss was too embarrassed to ask the actors to provide this particular voiceover. Oh my gosh. Filming had to be halted for 25 minutes after Sarah Michelle Gellar's big crying scene for the actress to compose herself.
No good.
That's such a random answer. Okay. With this episode, the show moved permanently from Mondays to Tuesdays as the result of the move of the episode originally aired just one day after Surprise. This episode was the highest rated episode of Buffy ever, scoring a 5.2 Nielsen rating and a 6.7 overall overnight rating, which each ratings point representing 980,000 households and millions of viewers. This episode scored the biggest of the series, 8.2 million.
Like all together or just up to this point?
I think it's all together, maybe. Huh. That makes sense. You know, that giant cliffhanger. Yeah. He's destroying, like, the relationship of Buffy and Angel. Phases. In the opening scene, Oz remarks on the moving eyes of the cheerleader statue, a reference to Amy's evil mother, who was the former cheerleader who was trapped in the statue in which. Oz becomes a werewolf in this episode, a defining characteristic of his character for the remainder of the series. He was turned into a werewolf by a bite from his younger cousin, who was in human form at the time. This episode marks the first appearance of werewolves in the Buffyverse. After a chase through many episodes, Willow and Oz finally become a couple. Their love strong enough to withstand the discovery of Oz's condition. The Scooby Gang have their own special powers and problems that will be explored in later episodes. Xander remains obsessed with Willow, though setting the stage for Lover's Walk. And Jealous continues to torment Buffy, strengthening her resolve to kill him. In the pilot, Welcome to the Hellmouth, Buffy is able to tell from the briefest of glances that the vampire victim will not rise again, in Giles' words. But in the funeral home, Buffy has no idea that Teresa will be turned into a vampire until she actually rises, despite getting a good long look at the body. This may show that Buffy, though being very tough and strong, is little or no able in magic or metaphysical, as opposed to Giles himself and especially Willow.
Let me go ahead and say that one thing we didn't really talk about and you just glossed over. One of the weakest Buffy moments. When she did not kill Angel after their battle at the mall, or Angelus. Like, I get it. She's 17. She just lost her virginity to the dude. Like, I get it. But if we're going to find faults with the Slayer, this is my first real fault with her. Because, like, people are going to die now, and it really is on her head because she had the chance to kill him, but she didn't because she has feelings for him. So that's... That was like her... You talk about everybody fucks. So that was the first time since we've been rewatching that I really felt like Buffy fucked up. But, you can explain it away and maybe forgive her, but it's still... If you're the Slayer, you gotta kill fucking vampires. That's what you do.
Even if she didn't kill him, she should at least, try to capture him. He was right there, holding his balls in his hands. So at least you had him. Yeah. Even if you didn't kill him, you could at least try to capture him in some way.
I will say, though, if she did not do that, if she would have killed him, there wouldn't have been a lot of season left.
I get why he didn't do that. Well, he still could escape eventually. That was like a major mistake on her behalf.
Yep.
There's gonna be severe consequences later in the season.
That's why if you ever have a question about killing a robot or a werewolf or a vampire, you just do it, Ash. You just kill him.
That's different.
We'll wait until you get attacked by a werewolf, and we'll see how you feel about it. Okay.
I just give him some NyQuil. Take this. Let's see where it goes. The background character of Larry is seen again. This is his second appearance. He will reappear a few times until the season 3 finale. Xander says to Oz, "I know what it's like to crave the taste of freshly killed meat, to be taken over by these control urges." Thus, he inadvertently admits that he remembers being possessed by a hyena spirit in the pack. Buffy calls him out on knowing, and he admits, I said I didn't remember anything about that. But Buffy fails to pursue it. In this episode, Gib Kane claims to kill werewolves so he can sell their pelts. That's so fucking terrible. He's the worst. In the Angel episode, Unleash, Jacob Kane, Crane intends to serve his guest a live lichen propus exertus werewolf, a rare breed of werewolves that walks on its hind legs. It's supposedly not common in North America and reverts to the human form upon death.
Yep.
Served alive, unlike the common werewolves like Oz. Cordelia implies in this episode that she has had sexual intercourse, claiming that her father falsely thought she was still a good girl. Since Cordelia was offered up as a virgin sacrifice to Machida early on in the season in Reptile Boy, she must have lost her virginity at some point in the season in between those two episodes. I'm almost certain that Cordelia is still a virgin.
She might be, but she doesn't give off the... she probably purposefully gives off the image that she is not.
Yeah, I think that they're trying to tell you, she's not a virgin. But
the only reason she would be is that she really wants to be, because obviously, people are trying to bang that girl all the time. So.
Yeah, So it's not like she doesn't. I'm sure she gets offers all the time. Even like she even doesn't sleep with Xander because Xander was still a virgin in their whole relationship.
Yeah, good for her. Avoided that bullet.
This is the first time Xander stakes a vampire unaided. He previously staked his best friend Jesse in the Harvest, but it was an accident, aided by a panicked patron of the Bronze.
He was sort of aided. Buffy was wrestling with the vampire when he staked it. So
she was kind of losing at that point. So.
I mean, it was a newbie vampire. Do we really think Buffy was about to lose to a newborn?
Well, no, she wasn't. Who she wasn't going to lose? What she was off for a game, you know, considering like she just realized that you know her boyfriend just you know killed someone. So it's a good chance she could.
Well, my point is, he stabbed it in the back when it wasn't looking. It's not like he took it on. All right, he's got a ways to go.
The stake was not aided, okay?
Okay.
Right after Buffy and Giles meet Kane, he mentions the werewolf's attraction to sexual heat. Buffy says, "I think I know where to go. We just have to make it there before Mainfield."
I like when Giles wanted to go knock on their windows to ask if they had
seen. Oh, yeah, I forgot to talk about that scene. I was sitting there laughing, so I was like, Giles looks like such a creeper going to this teenage makeout spot.
With Buffy, too. Kane was all like, good for you, man.
It was like, it's bad enough, like, if he was alone, just looking through windows with a flashlight, you know, kids, you know, making out.
I think that might be worse if he was alone.
But then he's, like, there with, like, this underage teenage, like, this teenage girl.
Well, I mean, let's be clear about it. Angel's way older than Giles, so.
Yeah, but he's like, whatever. To give you know, Angel the benefit of the doubt, you know, you got to get the time period that he's from, where, you know.
Where 200-year-old men slept with teenagers all the time.
Talking about, like, he's. Shush. But he's. He's throwing me off right now. Try not to laugh. But his age, you know, just. If I take out the 200 years of being a vampire, he's probably, like, what, his early 20s?
Probably.
So, you know, back in his, you know, his time period, you know, him being his age or her being her age, it's not that big of, you know, it wasn't an uncommon thing.
Yeah, if you take out the 200 years, right, it's no big deal.
And then he was like a former prostitute after that, after he was turned. But, you know, pop culture reference, Xander mentions Robbie the robot from Forbidden Planet. In an essay exploring the feminist ethics of Buffy, Shannon Craigo Snell uses this episode as an example of how the series examines the threat of sexual violence facing women and girls as a problematic background against which women attempt to have satisfying relationships with men. Craigo Snell, she points out that this threat is embodied by the character Larry, who sexually harasses Buffy and other girls during a gym class focused on self-defense. And the werewolf hunter, Kane, who says Buffy's failure to capture the werewolf is what happens when a woman tries to do a man's job. This theme is made explicit when Giles describes werewolves as potent, extreme representation of our inborn animalistic traits, predatory and aggressive with no conscience. Buffy responds, in other words, she's a typical male. Yep. Anyway, other than Oz, who has a conscience, the main werewolves in Buffy, Angel, are Veruca, no conscience, and Nina, who has a conscience.
Yeah, Nina's good people.
Yeah, Veruca was the worst.
I like Nina more than I like Oz, for the record. If I was going to, I mean, as far as, like, shit killing werewolves go, I might spare Nina.
But I like Oz. I would actually date Oz. Oz is someone I would totally date.
I would totally date Nina. Have you seen Nina?
Yes. Especially in high high school though, but I felt, because like especially in high school, I was totally into like short guys, because I, even though I only dated tall guys.
Yeah, I've
but,
never been
like,
into short guys, so I don't really
really.
relate. Yeah, it's not a thing.
Stick it in your pocket. But no, I hated tall guys, even though that's what I ended up dating all the time. I was into short guys, so I would have dated guys, and he's so chill.
I like Oz fine. It's just like,
he's not your type.
He's just not for me. I mean, he has a little too much dick, if we're getting specific about it.
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay, yeah. This is the first of the only three Oz-centric episodes. Marty Noxon states in the DVD commentary that this episode is viewed as the first in the Willow Oz trilogy. Wild at Heart is the second, with New Moon Rising as the last, with the final actual appearance of Oz, his official last appearance is in Restless, though he's only in a dream. Actor Jack Conley, who plays Kane in this episode, also portrays the recurring character Sanjhan in season 3 and 5 of Angel. This episode is included in the Slayer Collection Willow DVD, and this is also the only time we see Oz's house. I couldn't find a rating, original air rating for this episode, but yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, we will be back. Well, what's coming up, Ash? Do you know? We're terrible about this. We never know what our next
episode is. I had it on the screen and I forgot to scroll. The next episodes are Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered.
Yep.
Passion, which is one of my personal favorites, and Killed by Death.
Alright. Well, we can look forward to that and hope you join us again. Please like, comment, subscribe, share. Check out our other podcasts where we talk about lots of current television shows. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. I'm John.
And I'm Ash.
And we're out.